before there were hashtags.
A dissection of pop culture past.
With Eric Dallinger.
And Carly Anna Billings.
Each week we hop in our time machine and take a look at the past of pop culture.
Hey friends, and welcome to the Before There Were Hashtags podcast.
Woo!
I am your host, Eric Dallinger, and I'm here with the incredible, the incomparable, the amazing Carly Anna Billings.
Hi, Eric. What a friggin' time to be here. What a friggin' time to be together. This is a party, and we're here to give it to you, listeners. So thanks for joining us.
Woo, woo,
woo.
You know what I've noticed listening back to some of our old pods, Carly?
What?
Sometimes I stall, not stall, like, it's like there's a hiccup. I'm like, Miss Carly Billings, because I'm never sure if I want to call you Carly Billings or Carly Anna Billings.
There's just like a pause, just depending on how you feel that day, what version of my name you'll use.
Yeah, it depends.
I mean, they're both me, so ain't mad at it anyway.
They're both you.
Yeah.
Where does the Carly Anna come from?
Well, the Anna is my middle name, so it's just my full name.
Okay.
Yeah. Sometimes I just like using it. I like to be a three-namer sometimes, like Neil Patrick Harris.
Right. There's an SNL sketch called Three First Names.
Yeah.
It was Jamie Lynn Spears and Billy Ray Cyrus sang the theme song. It was like, three first names, if you only have one name, it's like having no names, you better have three names.
That's them. They got three names.
Hosted by Neil Patrick Harris.
So
and then
funny.
There's Jamie Lee Curtis on it.
Yes, Jamie Lee Curtis, one of the most infamous, famous three namers out there. I just want to be here. What can I say?
Of course, these were actors playing them, not the real
yes,
people.
Yes.
And I think I don't really remember all the details, but it was pretty funny. It was one of those like SNL sketches where you're like, this is just stupid, but it's funny.
Which is like a good chunk of SNL sketches, which is great because it still has you laughing. That's all it's meant to do.
Off the top of your head, do you have a favorite SNL sketch?
Absolutely, 100%. It's the one where it's one of those random sketches. It is one where Melissa McCarthy is one of the guest castmates on the show, and it's a game show. And it's Guess That Phrase, and she plays this very strange contestant, and it's like a fake 70s game show. It's amazing and very silly, and she says like pass the mash.
Is it Secret Word?
No, it's called Guess That Phrase.
Okay.
Yeah, and she literally like she keeps saying the phrase pass the mash. It's like almost like a fake Wheel of Fortune where they have to guess the phrase.
She keeps
guessing like things like pass the mash, things that don't fit. Like it's very, very silly. It's my favorite. It's just nonsense. Yeah. What's your favorite, Eric?
Oh, there's so many that I love. I basically love anything with Kristen Wiig. Like the Kristen Wiig era of SNL was by far my favorite. One thing that me and my dad, we always will just whenever we're excited about something, me and my dad go, oh my god. A surprise party. Which is of course Sue the Surprise and the Surprise Party, which is Kristen Wiig, and she always gets so excited and she can't contain her excitement about the surprise party. But I also really love Secret Word, which is also Kristen Wiig.
Mm-hmm.
And she plays Mary Louise Grayson. I think it's something like that. And she's like an old Broadway star and they have to guess the secret word. And she always just says the word. And she goes, because I'm an actor and I said it. I brought it to life. I see the word and I say it.
Iconic.
And then she always talks about her reviews. She's always like, when I starred as Little Susie in the Tea House, the New York Times said, not ready yet.
Oh my gosh, she's incredible. Speaking of Kristen Wiig, she just had a movie come out not too long ago. Have you seen it?
Wonder Woman?
No, it's Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. That's how they say it.
Oh, yeah, I did hear about this. I haven't seen it, but
I saw it, I think, the day it came out or the day after it came out. And I was talking with Pal the Pod, Cecilia, and she was like, oh my gosh, Carly, like, of course you loved that movie. I was like, well, I liked it. She was like, what? That has you written all over it. And I had just watched it that day. And I was like, yeah, it was good. But then, like, now, probably like a few days later, I'm like, yeah, it was good. It wasn't like blow me out of the water funny, but it had a lot of really good moments, comedy moments, yeah. Which is the best, you know, that's all you can ask for. And you know what? It is a movie that has me written all over it because it's stupid and it's fun. And it has like starring like they're basically playing like middle-aged white ladies from the suburbs who've gone nowhere, and then they decide to go on a vacation to Vista Del Mar in Florida, which is like their big exciting thing. It's very funny. Great premise.
You heard it here first, people. Here first. Carly's review. Carly's review. Also, it's Mother's Day at the time of recording.
Yes.
So just a little shout out to our moms, and remember all the pop culture moms are into. Like my mom, she loves Dirty Dancing. That would be her pop pick forever.
Yes.
Is Dirty Dancing.
So good.
She loves Patrick Swayze. Jennifer Grey.
Amazing. There's nothing to not love about it. It's a classic.
Yeah.
A sequel moment.
It is a classic.
Shout out to mothers of all kinds. Shout out to my mother, Rena. Her pop pick would probably be the Styx song Sail Away, because she likes it a lot. And she forgets any music by anyone else most of the time. Yeah. So that would probably be her pop pick of the week. I could ask her, but I'm not gonna. Just gonna tell you what it is.
I got my mom a great like throw blanket that is the poster of Dirty Dancing.
And, yes.
But in that sort of like simplified way where the people don't really have faces, it's like a style. It's not creepy. It looks cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a minimal picture.
Iconic.
I love it. It's really cool. She really liked it.
That's so sweet.
Yeah. So happy Mother's Day to all the moms and all the celebrity moms and all the moms making waves in pop culture and those moms that are not making waves in pop culture, because you matter too.
That's right. All the moms that have shaped us, all the ladies that are moms that have shaped us, no matter whose mom they are or no matter whose mom figure they are, regardless if they are a mom or not.
Yeah. Shout out to all the women who aren't moms too, but who are still contributing and making the world a better place.
That's right. Just shout out to all y'all. You're doing great. You're doing a great job. We really appreciate you.
We do. We do.
Heckin' yeah.
Heck yes.
Well, you know what's funny is that this week, the topics of the week are two women, and they're both moms.
They are two moms, two women. But the story's not about them being moms, but they are moms, and they're pretty
but
great.
But they turns out they are moms. Yeah.
And they definitely have moms.
Yes, that's right. Correct.
I don't know where I was going with that.
I don't think there's anywhere else to go with it, but that's okay. Sometimes you try to one up it, and it's like,
goodness.
That's all. That's the end of that one.
I think I just needed a good laugh.
I love it. We love a laugh.
We
Who doesn't love
a laugh?
A laugh? Everyone laugh with us. Let's count down on 3, 2, 1.
Yes, that was my evil laugh.
See, you fake laugh long enough and then you'll just real laugh. That's the trick.
Yes. I also love a good evil laugh, and I, you know, when you introduce yourself at like summer camp and you always have to make your like alliteration, like I'm like, you'd be like, I'm creative Carly. Mm-hmm. I would always say I'm evil Eric.
Because it's way better to be evil. Everyone knows it's more fun. Everyone knows it's more fun to be the villain than the hero.
Oh, I loved playing a villain. Playing
LeFou
in Beauty and the Beast was so much fun.
Oh, you were amazing as LeFou. My dad still talks
thanks.
About it. Me and my dad went to see you in it, and it was so funny. My dad was like, Eric is so funny. I was like, I know. That's my best friend up there. Making
fun.
Everyone laugh. And being evil as heck.
Being evil, but like, so but dumb evil. The best thing about the Beauty and the Beast villains are like, they are both idiots.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not like, they're evil in like a cartoonish way. They're not like, like, you know, serial killer evil.
Don't get me wrong. Here. Serial killer evil, I bet, is also really fun to play. I just haven't done it yet.
That's true. There's nothing better than being on stage playing a villain and hearing people boo you.
Yeah.
it is the best thing in the world. Like, it's better than applause. And applause is amazing. That's like half the reason we do our jobs, I swear, as actors. But to hear boos, to know that you've gotten people to dislike you so much that they're like, "Boo!" Oh, that's there's nothing better. There's nothing better because it's so fun.
All right, friend, let us gas up our time machine. I'm setting
my
timer right now. Here we go, gassing up the time machine so we can go back to the way back. And this time it really is the way back.
Oh, it is the way back for this one. Buckle up, babies.
All right, 5 minutes to set the time machine. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So for today's gassing up, I'd like to talk about the one, the only celebrity mom, Queen Hillary Duff.
We stan Hillary Duff. Yes, ma'am.
We stan Hillary Duff. And Hillary Duff, you know what? Okay, so the news is Hillary Duff is going to star in the sort of spin-off sequel series to How I Met Your Mother, How I Met Your Father on Hulu. Well, I guess we'll be Disney Plus Star in Canada because that's basically Hulu. But
yes.
Minus Handmaid's Tale, which is on Crave. But, you know.
Yeah, some stuff gets on and Shrill. Like, some stuff goes to Crave. Some stuff goes to Disney Plus in Canada. But, yeah.
Basically, so, like, stuff that was already sold to Crave goes to Crave. And everything new will go on Disney Plus. Because if you didn't know, something like 70% of Hulu is owned by the Walt Disney Company.
Yeah. Correctamundo.
And it's basically why Disney Plus kind of sucks in the States, because it only has the kids stuff. But in Canada, we got Star, which is different than Stars, which is available on Crave.
Don't get them confused. You can't watch.
Don't get them
you
confused.
You can't watch Outlander on Disney Plus. Don't get
so
them confused.
So many people are like, "Oh, I don't need Disney Plus for Star because I already get Star on Crave." And I'm like, not the same thing, people. Not the same thing.
You get Stars. You don't get Star, baby. It's different.
But back to Hillary. Hillary has been cast in the role of Sophie in How I Met Your Father.
Good for her. She's making a comeback in a big way. That's awesome.
Well, here's the thing, too. Poor Hill was supposed to star in the remake of Lizzie McGuire. Not remake. The reboot of Lizzie McGuire. And it got canceled for creative differences because Hillary Duff and the creator of the show wanted to create an adult version of Lizzie McGuire, where Lizzie McGuire, like, the natural progression of where Lizzie was, but Disney Plus really wanted to make more of, like, a Raven's House, you know, the sequel series to That's a Raven, where it's, like, more sort of, it's aimed at the same age demographic that the original series was, where Hillary wanted to make a
show.
Just
like how they did with Girl Meets World and, like, stuff like that. They wanted it to be, the parents are the people from the before, so they're still there, people you love, but the actual stars of the show are new young people for young people.
Hillary wanted to make a show that was for the age demographic that watched Lizzie McGuire back in the late 2000s. Or late, not late,
which I would live for, and I would lose it. I'm literally wearing Lizzie McGuire lip gloss right now. Can't tell a lie.
Lizzie McGuire, groundbreaking. She wanted a bra, and she got a bra. Have you seen that episode?
So good.
I want a bra!
Oh my god, love it. It is really exciting to be able to say that we're getting Hill back in a real way, which
is here's the thing. It's some people are unfair to Hill because they're like, she disappeared. She had a 7-season run on Younger. It just was on a premium television network, so it wasn't aired on like NBC or ABC, so we just didn't, like, not everybody saw it, but it was, she had 7 seasons, and it starred Sutton Foster, so it was pretty legit, and Nico Tortorella.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it was enough people that, like, it wasn't nothing, but you're right in that, like, it wasn't to a large audience, maybe. It was a legit show, but maybe not to as big an audience as Hillary deserves, in my opinion.
I believe it was TV Land. Right? It's also on Amazon Prime.
I think so. Something like that.
I have been like early pop pick. I have been watching Younger on Amazon Prime because the seventh season is coming out gradually on it, and I've been enjoying it. It's all about the publishing world and how Sutton Foster's character has to pretend to be a 26-year-old in order to get into the publishing world, even though she has an 18-year-old child and is a
'Cause that makes
something year
sense.
old.
That makes lots of sense.
I mean, Sun's beautiful. She can pass for young, so.
That's true. She does have a, she's always had a young face.
Also, have to shout out Drag Race Down Under.
Yeah, that's true. Down Under.
Down
So
Under.
I haven't been watching. And I mean, it's still early in the season. I still have time to get into it.
Oh, for sure.
I'm not that I'm drag raced out.
Oh,
I
it's
don't know if it's like
relentless.
necessary for me to watch.
It's relentless. Like Drag Race, it goes like Drag Race, New, Drag Race Down Under, Drag Race. Sorry, starting over. We're out of time, by the way. Drag
Oh.
Race and Drag Race UK were at the same time. Now we're watching Down Under. Then there'll be All
Yeah.
Stars. Then there will be Canada. Then there will be
I
International because they're doing an international season. Jimbo and Lemon are rumored to be on it. And
know.
then
I
we're going
know.
to.
And then it's like, when is it special anymore? That's like the part for me. I'm like, when is it special if it's all the time? And it's like, maybe for some people that's very exciting. I remember how it felt to be like, we finally got Drag Race, like have Drag Race Canada. So I'm very excited for our Aussies, but like I don't know for me personally if I'm gonna watch it. Like I haven't watched all of them. I didn't watch like Denmark. I didn't watch the Philippines. I didn't like I
Is
just
there
watched
Philippines?
UK.
I didn't know that Philippines or Thailand.
Yeah, they're Oh, Thailand. You're right.
Yeah.
Is there not also Philippines?
I've never heard of
Maybe I made
Philippines. I
that
know
up.
why I know Thailand exists.
Thailand for sure has Drag Race.
I can't watch the non-English versions, and I know I'm gonna get canceled for that, but I find the non-English versions of the show, I'm just reading subtitles the whole time and I'm so dyslexic and
And you're not getting to pay attention.
I'm
Yeah, I
legitimate
understand.
dyslexic. I'm not like just saying it, like diagnosed.
Yeah, hold on. Drag Race Philippines premiered in 2018.
Oh, okay. You have it here, folks. New pop news. Drag Race Philippines exists, but I don't know. Never heard of it before.
Yeah, I guess so. It's a parody show. It's a parody show, maybe?
Oh. All right. Well,
Anyways, yeah.
we've chatted enough. Why don't we get into today's topic? We
Yeah.
blast off in our time machine. So today we are talking about
Woo!
two iconic legends.
Truly iconic status. If you've read the description, you know what we're talking about. If you hear their names, you're gonna be like, I know exactly who that is. No questions
We are
asked.
talking about old Hollywood meets old Broadway. Golden Age of Hollywood meets the Golden Age of Broadway.
Yeah, we're talking about like Tale of the Golden Age. Like they're just getting in under the wire.
All right, so we are talking about Audrey Hepburn and Julie Andrews
Yes, we are.
in the iconic two films of Mary Poppins and My Fair Lady. And these films are connected. Many people don't know this now, but they did at the time because it was a big scandal that these films have a
It's a
lot of
big deal.
connections. So, primarily, we're going to be talking about My Fair Lady over Mary Poppins, but Mary Poppins will pop in. So, just to set it
Can
up.
I give us a little background on our two queens here though for a quick
Yeah,
sec?
go for it.
So that if folks aren't, you know, people I'm sure know their names, I'm sure can picture their faces. And if not, then here, let me help you out. Let me help you out real quick. So, we're jumping in with Julie Andrews. She was born October 1st, 1935, and she is a Libra queen born in England. She began performing at the age of 7 in vaudeville acts with her mom and stepmother. And then by eight, no, before I jump ahead too much, by age 18, she landed her Broadway debut in The Boyfriend in 1954,
Yes.
before which she had already been performing on London's West End, which is the Broadway of, you know,
She sang for the
England.
Queen at 13 years old.
Yeah, like, hello, you know, this girl's got it. Audrey Hepburn was born May 4th, 1929. She is a Taurus queen, and she was born in Belgium. She studied ballet when she was young. That's, she's very poised. She's very, you know, beautifully proper in that way. And a lot of it comes from her having studied ballet. And she performed as a chorus girl as well in London's West End. And she starred in the play Gigi on Broadway in 1951. Mm-hmm. She also did a few movies, but her big break was in 1953 with the iconic movie Roman Holiday, for which she became the first ever actress to win an Oscar, a Golden Globe, and a BAFTA for the same performance.
Yes. All right. So we're going to, I'm going to give you just a short overview of My Fair Lady. So My Fair Lady is a stage musical that was produced in 1956, written by Lerner and Lowe. It is based on the play Pygmalion by Shaw, and it was, of course, musicalized, and the ending was slightly changed where she ends up with Higgins instead of Freddie. Now, in 1964, the movie comes out. Now, the movie was somewhat expensive to make because the rights, the film rights for My Fair Lady cost $5.5 million for Warner Brothers to buy the film rights to My Fair Lady.
Woof!
Yeah, that is expensive. Woof. So
that's just the rights, and at that time, baby, that's a lot of money.
And the budget for the movie was $12 million, but they eventually pushed it to be over $17 million. And because of this big budget,
they put almost half of their original budget to the rights alone.
Yeah,
like that. Can you imagine?
Now going back to the play for a minute, the original Eliza Doolittle was played by the beautiful Julie Andrews. Julie Andrews would play this.
Yes, it was.
Julie Andrews would play this role for 2 years on Broadway, and then for an extra additional year in London's West End. So she had played the role of Eliza for 3 years. She is on the cast recording, which sold over 4 million copies in the U.S. alone, going to number one on the Billboard 200, which at the time...
It's incredible. Yeah. One of which, vinyl copies, is sitting in my room because I listened to it today. It's iconic. The show was a smashing success. But a funny fact, for when she played for American audiences, she had to tone down the Cockney accent that she learned and adopted for the role because they couldn't understand her. But when she performed it a year later in the West End, she could turn it back up because the West End audiences could understand her, and they found it much funnier.
Yes.
Which to me just is so funny. She was so good that they were like, actually, can you be less good? The Americans don't understand you.
So Julie became like pretty synonymous with this role. Like America knew her as Eliza Doolittle, even though she had only done it on Broadway. But because of the sale of the soundtrack, or the cast recording, I should say. So because Julie became synonymous with this role amongst Americans, most Americans thought that when it would go to film, she would be the obvious choice to play Eliza Doolittle. Boy, were they wrong. So
maybe they were incorrect. They were not right. No. If I were who I am now in the 60s, which is somebody who's a fan of Broadway, of musicals, of movies, you know, obviously of pop culture, that's why we're here. I would know Julie Andrews as she is Eliza Doolittle. She's the only one we know. That's who it is. Not only that, though, I would also think she's very qualified for the role because she also originates, just before they start casting for My Fair Lady for the movie, she also has the time to originate the role of Guinevere in Lerner and Lowe's Camelot in 1960, which actually, before being on Broadway, premiered in Toronto, which is really fun because, I mean, a lot of shows before they go to Broadway often premiere in other cities like Chicago, Toronto, sometimes LA. They have to play like few different places to feel out how the audience is feeling a lot of times before a show heads to Broadway, and so it's not uncommon. But yeah, Camelot, which is one of my favorite little shows, that's an understatement, premiered there.
Camelot was also JFK's favorite musical.
I know, he loves it, Camelot. And then not only that, like she's continuously like this big name in theater. She also in 1962 has a special with my iconically favorite comedian. It's Julian Carroll at Carnegie Hall with Carol Burnett, and like it's like this is a TV spot. And so she also does a TV made for TV Cinderella before this in 1957 by Rodgers and Hammerstein. So she has like TV experience. Mm-hmm. She has a lot of theater experience. At this point, she just doesn't have film experience, which yeah. I think leads into, you know, the only reason she wasn't cast
so
in the film.
Jack Warner, who is the head of Warner Brothers, he's one of the Warners. He decided, so
he's one of the brothers.
Exactly. So because the movie was going to take so much money with $5.5 million just for the rights alone, he needed a big star. He needed to bank on somebody huge. And so Julie was never actually really that far into the running. Jack Warner estimated that Julie Andrews would only bring in an extra $1 million to the movie, whereas if you got somebody else mentioned, one Audrey Hepburn, he could make an extra $5 million off of the movie.
I roll. Can I also just say, though, the thing that bothers me the most about this, like, I understand trying to make money. That's already a problem to me. But the biggest issue I take with it is that they took on Rex Harrison to play opposite. And he, because he originated the role on yeah. Broadway as well, and he still got to play it. But they brought him on because Cary Grant, famed, you know, film actor, said no. And so they're like, I guess we'll take on Rex Harrison. But you know what? We're not going to take Julie freaking yeah. Andrews. I'm sorry. Who do people know today at home? I'm sorry. It's not Rex Harrison. For me, it might be. But for like the everyday person in the world, they're not going to know who Rex Harrison is. But everyone knows Julie freaking Andrews. Come on. She is alive with the Sound of Music.
Yeah, I was also going to mention that Rex Harrington, he wasn't their first choice either, but he eventually got the role because enough other actors turned it down. But generally speaking, there wasn't a lot of negative press about Audrey getting the role over Julie, even though every single casting notice that came out about this did mention Julie Andrews at some point. But it wasn't like this. They weren't so much pitted against each other at this point. Now, Julie Andrews did express disappointment, but never resentment towards Audrey about Audrey taking the role of Eliza.
Totally. She expressed like a disappointment for not being considered, which is very mm-hmm. fair. But she, I think at one point in an interview, I think maybe later in 1970, she literally says, but I understand why they did it. Like, it makes total sense. Like, she's not mad about it anyway. And of course she's not. She's a freaking angel.
Now, so they film the movie. They film My Fair Lady. And I'm just trying to decide how I'm gonna phrase everything. So now, commonly when movies are made, in Hollywood, musical movies, I should say, they use something called playback. Like when you watch Rent the Musical, you are not seeing Anthony Rapp sing on camera. He's lip syncing or he is singing, but you're hearing a recorded version of his own voice. Now, famously in...
Totally. You're not hearing him singing mm-hmm. live.
Yes.
Is what...
In Les Mis, you are, because they decided to have...
Because that was their big exciting thing.
But generally speaking, when you watch...
They were like, we're singing live. It's like a musical. We get it. It's not... That's normal to us. But
when you watch Mamma Mia, Amanda Seyfried is not singing live. That weird vibrato Amanda Seyfried has, that was recorded. Amanda Seyfried, musical movie queen.
In a comfortable studio. She's not running up the cliffs of Greece. Just... you know, using her vibrato.
But in old Hollywood, it was also very, very common to use somebody else's voice for said playback.
To dub them. Yeah.
So Audrey Hepburn signed on for the movie mm-hmm. believing that she was going to sing her own part. Now, she worked with a vocal coach. She worked really hard and she recorded every single song in the movie. Now, mm-hmm. this was basically just to keep her happy because the the executives at Warner Brothers decided that she was not a strong enough singer for this role. Eliza Doolittle, famously a challenging sing, Julie Andrews has even admitted that she never really felt like she got a full grasp of the part vocally. Now, so they bring in...
Mm-hmm. I mean, also to put in there, throw in there real quick, Audrey is an alto and this part is her soprano. Just to throw that in there in the mix as well. Like, she not only does she not have the tech, she lacks technical quality because it's not, she's not a singer. She sings in some of her movies, but she's not a singer. If anything, she's a dancer, you know. But she's not, it's not in her range. It's also just not in her range physically, you know. And that's okay.
So,
but they don't tell her that.
She
they don't
did
tell her
know that.
That
they were going to bring in Marnie Nixon to sing some of the high notes to sort of help her out. Sort of a la Zac Efron in High School Musical, where Drew Seeley sang most of it, but his voice, Zac's voice is in there. Yes. That's a little tea for you. Zac Efron.
His head's in the game, but his heart's
really
in the song.
That much,
you know?
In High School Musical.
Can't help it.
So Marnie Nixon is, she's famous for being Hollywood's worst kept secret.
I know. You've heard her voice.
You've heard her voice.
I can't tell you
so
how many times. And you haven't thought it was her. You didn't know.
Yeah. So she sang for Natalie Wood in West Side Story. She also sang some of...
Only you. You're the only thing I'll see. That's her. It's not Natalie Wood.
She also sang some of Rita Moreno's part in West Side Story as well. She sang some of the Anita stuff as well. Deborah Carr in The King and I. That's not her voice. That's Marnie Nixon's voice. Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, when Marilyn Monroe hits a high note. Not Marilyn. It's Marnie.
Marnie's just out here doing
Marnie
it all
is
for
known
everyone.
For being very, very good at changing her voice to match the intonation of other singers. So she could... It was believable that Natalie Wood's body could produce Marnie Nixon's voice because she could manipulate her soprano.
Well, she's like a Christiana Bianco. Like, if Christiana Bianco happened when it was like old Hollywood, that's what she would be doing. She just does really great impersonations. And I would argue that Marnie Nixon not only has like a wonderfully beautiful technical voice, she also just like... is good. You're right, at matching the tone of others so that it feels more seamless, or it just sounds like it's coming out of their body. You're
halfway
right.
Through the film, they tell Audrey that basically they're not using her voice. They use her voice for certain parts where she sings in a Cockney accent, but basically whenever she's singing Pretty, which is like 90% of the score.
I could have danced all night. Yeah. None of that is
they
her,
use
baby.
They use Marnie Nixon's voice. So, of course.
Yeah, I think the parts that you can tell it's her singing is mostly, the stuff that's Cockney accent, kind of like cock singing. That's more like character actor
there,
singing.
That is Audrey singing that. But when she goes into the Pretty Bridge,
is
Audrey not
singing.
Audrey anymore.
Yeah, no way. I listened today, actually, on YouTube. There's some, if you want to hear how Audrey sounds in this movie, there are clips where you can, like, if you just, like, type it on in, they're like, beep, bop, boop. Like, this movie, My Fair Lady, Audrey, real voice, there'll be lots of clips that come up. And I heard her, and, like, she's, it's not for her. It's not for her. She's flat. She's just tired. You can tell
she's
out of
her
depth.
Yeah,
she's she's sweet, but
now,
it's not for her.
Halfway through the movie, they tell her she's not happy about this because she worked really hard to be able to sing, or what she believed to be singing the part. But
She tried her best, and it was good. Like, I'd pay $10 to see her in a community theater production of that. You know,
yeah,
I would. I'd pay a full $10.
So during all of this, of course, Julie Andrews is starring, as we mentioned, in Camelot. Now, Walt Disney goes to see
so great.
Camelot.
This is a great show.
And sees Julie Andrews and says, "That is my Mary Poppins." And Julie Andrews gets cast in Walt Disney's Mary Poppins.
It's her big TV break. It's her big film break, baby.
So Mary Poppins is, of course, an adaptation of P.L. Taver's book of the same name. Now, this was a big deal for Walt Disney, too, because this was going to be his first live-action movie because, well, there's a few reasons. A, P.L. Travers famously didn't really want the movie to be made, period, but also she refused, flat out refused, to allow an animated adaptation of her movie come to fruition. Now, also, this was perfect for Walt Disney, who was having his animators strike against him at this very time. So, perfect. He finds his star in Miss Julie Andrews.
He's like, come be a spoonful of sugar. And she was like, what?
So Mary Poppins, My Fair Lady, come out roughly at the same time. And in the news media, it gets played up basically that the woman that should have been playing Eliza Doolittle is playing in the theater right next to Audrey Hepburn, who couldn't sing her own part in the movie. And this was really played up as this sort of like rivalry and like Julie's comeback, that not comeback, but this is Julie's revenge, is that she gets to be astonishing in Mary Poppins, and rave reviews for her in Mary Poppins. It's also important to note that Audrey also got very good reviews in My Fair Lady, but a lot of reviewers sort of talk about how, did she really give a full performance if she didn't sing her own part? And it's like one of those things where now I find pretty much all actors are singing their own parts, even sometimes not in favorable light, I would say. I don't know if I ever really need to see or hear Emma Watson sing Sorry,
it's sometimes it is that thing where nowadays you expect, because you're seeing the person, you expect them to be singing because you see it all the time. Whereas like back, and guess what? With our technology, we can make anyone sound passable. You know what I mean? With auto-tune, you can make anyone sound passable. Whereas like back in the 50s and 60s, it was much harder to cut together something that sounded good if you really worked with subpar vocals. And so it made a lot of sense to have like the ghost voice, kind of like a ghost writer, right? It's the same kind of like, we just want to get it done situation and make it something good. But you're right. And today, like everyone, you're not going to hear somebody sing for the most part, especially if they're someone known. Because at this point, like Audrey has so many big things under her belt. She has an Oscar, all these things. She also has done Sabrina. She's done Funny Face. And she's also, 2 years before this movie comes out, she does her most iconic movie of all time, Breakfast at Tiffany's.
She's a star.
She is like hot, hot, hot.
Which is why she got the part, because she was the it girl.
Which is why she got the part. Yeah, because she is the name, right? And then plus Rex Harrison. Like Rex Harrison's bringing nobody. They already know that. So she's going to bring everybody. So it makes sense that they couldn't compromise on having her because the movie cost so much money, but they could compromise on switching out her vocals because they were like, we need her face, we don't necessarily need her voice.
So in the press, it was just played up of this irony that the woman that could have played Eliza was in the next theater killing it.
Yes.
Well, Audrey Hepburn was lip syncing,
not singing her part. Yeah, which is like, at the end, who cares? But also, it sells tickets. It sells papers. It drums up interest, you know. So it makes sense why that. And also, like, not to be this girl again, but the media loves pitting women against women. So of course it's going to be Audrey versus Julie. Who are you picking? Like, who are you supporting? Like, you can't choose both. Like, it's
so
a little bit
Julie
of that
definitely
too.
Comes out on top in almost all iterations of this. So both movies did extremely well. Like, let me just say, both movies did extremely well. But here we go.
Yes.
My Fair Lady made for $17 million, and it made $72.7 million at the box office. So it's success. Made lots of money.
Success.
Mary Poppins was made for somewhere between $4.4 million and $6 million.
I'm sorry, it cost to make that movie?
Yeah, and it made $103.1 million at the box office.
Blew it out of the water.
Mary Poppins was the highest selling movie of the year it came out. So Mary Poppins kills it. Now, at the Golden Globes, both Audrey Hepburn and Julie Andrews are nominated for Best Actress in a musical/comedy. And
yeah, same category. We stand.
The lovely Julie Andrews wins, and in her acceptance speech, she roasts them. Not Audrey,
it's
but
so
she
good.
Kills. She goes. Yeah. She goes. There's one man, something like this. There's one.
Here,
man
I have
Hollywood.
The exact quote. Do you want me to say it?
You okay? Say the exact quote because it is brilliant. Okay.
She goes. She walks up, so cute. She picks up her award. She stands at the podium. She just goes. My thanks to a man who made a wonderful movie and made this possible in the first place, Jack Warner. That was like the,
and the
like,
audience
mic drop.
Goes, mic drop.
The audience because, goes, because yeah. She's like, she's thanking Jack Warner for making My Fair Lady so she could make the better movie. It's so funny. It's so funny. And like, it's in a, such a cheeky Julie way that you can't be mad at her. Like, if you're a Jack
Warner, no, and
you
Jack
be mad
Warner
at
was laughing at
sweet.
It too.
Yeah, it's funny. And it's like, that is the perfect, Queens of Drag Race. If you want to see good roast comedy, that is a good roast joke because it hurts
that
nobody.
That was a read. That was a
funny.
Good read.
It's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah, truly iconic. Who doesn't love that moment?
We're going to fast forward a little bit to the Oscars. So
love it.
Unlike the Golden Globes, Julie was nominated. However, Audrey Hepburn was left out of the nomination.
She's left now, in the dust, baby.
My Fair Lady did amazing at the Oscars that year. It wins 8 of its nominations, and including Best Picture. So it's killer.
She's in the
it
best
does,
picture of the
great.
Year.
Rex
Incredible.
Rex Harrington.
Yes,
is
Rex Harrison.
Is it Harrison or Harrington?
It's Rex Harrison.
Harrison. I think I've been saying Harrington.
Oh, that's okay.
Probably I wrote it down wrong.
I mean, I'm sure he would answer to either. Let me look at the record. It's literally right in front of me.
Yeah.
Yeah, Harrison. Pretty sure it's Harrison.
Okay, well, I do humbly apologize. It's been caught, so
I'm sure he's not mad at you. It's fine.
I'm sure he will be listening to this pod. Is he dead? Is he still alive?
I think he's dead, Eric. I'm pretty sure he's dead.
Okay, great. Yeah, well, his estate can come after me for defamation.
Yeah, Rex Harrison. 100% dead. Died in 1990. Nice and dead. So he's good. If his ghost wants to haunt us, come over to Grocer Everywhere and come on that podcast. Don't come on this podcast. Thank you very much. Mid-show plug.
Yeah. So he wins for Best Actor. And so, of course, it's the Best Actress and Best Actor are, of course, Broadway's Dr. Higgins and...
Eliza Doolittle. Eliza Doolittle! Yeah. Sure.
So, but not the movie version, only the movie male, but not the female. It's also important to know that Jeremy Brent as Freddy in the movie was also dubbed, but was not given the same sort of scathing
notice
press about the movie as Audrey Hepburn.
As she was. It's because he's not the lead. He's just Freddy.
He's also a man.
And he's a man. That's a thing, too. Why got to be the man? Why can Rex Harrison be the lead? He's the man. Like, he's not important. I'm sorry. Anyways, it just makes me mad. You could have gotten any fancy man to play that. But instead, they were like, we'll get a woman. Woman is easier to cast. Makes me so mad. But Rex, in his speech, which was really cute, he won Best Actor. And in his speech, he thanked his two fair ladies. So he really gave a nod to Julie. And
beautiful.
Of course, not to Audrey. Yeah, it was like a really sweet idea. You know, his two fair ladies. Oh, mm-hmm. I love it. But what is interesting, Julie and Audrey actually met at the Oscars this year. This is when they like officially met each other, really.
Yeah. And took a picture together.
And took a picture. It's one of the cutest pictures you'll ever see. They're just standing next to each other. And Julie's holding her Oscar. And Audrey's just standing there.
But even the Oscars.
Audrey has Oscars at home. She's good.
Oscars were playing this up. When they would play the overture to the Oscars, they played a moment from My Fair Lady. And they cut between the two actresses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So funny.
Hyping up the drama. So spicy. Hyping up the drama.
Everybody loves the drama.
We love the drama here.
But you know who didn't love the drama was actually both of them, Audrey and Julie. They,
yeah, they
like
didn't love it.
Truly between each other had no beef. Like none. They were like, that's fine. Like Audrey literally said to her, Julie, you should have done it, but I didn't have the guts to turn it down. Because you know what? Audrey Hepburn loved the show. She was a huge fan of the stage version before she was brought on for the movie. So when they asked her for the movie, she was like, this is my chance to play this role that is so good and juicy. I can't possibly turn it down. Even if in my heart of hearts, I know that I won't be the best Eliza there is in the way that Julie could have been, you know?
Also, little fun facts about Mary Poppins. Before Walt Disney found Julie Andrews, he considered Mary Martin and Betty Davis for the role.
Whoa. Can you imagine if Betty Davis was Mary Poppins? I can't.
Yeah. I just watched a feud on Disney Plus.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, of course, about what's the film called? Whatever Happened to Baby Jane? And
yes.
Of course, Betty Davis is in that iconic movie. Could you imagine her as Mary Poppins? Completely
That's what I'm
different
saying.
Movie.
I'm like, in what world? Yeah, I can't. I would want to see it because I just can't. Like, my imagination has limits, apparently, and that is the limit for my imagination.
And other fun facts about Julie Andrews in Mary Poppins was that she voiced some of the animated characters as well in the movie. When they go into the little supercalifragilistic section.
Expialidocious moment. Yeah, it's so cute.
She
animated
some of the other
and
characters.
Real life in tandem. Yeah.
But Julie famously was actually a little bit ashamed of this Oscar because she felt like it was kind of a consolation prize for not playing Eliza Doolittle and kept the Oscar in her attic for many years to come because she wasn't proud of it.
Aw, I mean, I'm like, not to be this girl, and I love My Fair Lady, I love Mary Poppins, but one of these movies is not like the other, in my opinion. One of these movies does things that, like, is groundbreaking, whereas one is a great movie musical, you know what I mean? Like, I think Mary Poppins, visually, first of its kind. What the heck? Nobody was doing that.
No one.
You know what I mean? And, like, I can understand how she could be like, well, they just felt bad for me. Like, I guess it goes to show that even the best of us can't always tell they're the best of us when they're the best of us, which is, like, really sweet. And really, she's such a humble woman, you know? Love her. Gotta love her. The funny thing, too, about Julie is she was also, like, Audrey clearly was a fan of Julie because she said, you should have done it. Like, you were amazing. Like, whatever. Julie was also a fan of Audrey. She saw when Breakfast at Tiffany's came out, she saw it 3 times in the theater. She saw it and then she went back 2 more times to watch it. And I have another quote that she, and also Julie has another tie to that movie as well, Breakfast at Tiffany's. She actually eventually married the director Blake Edwards in 1969.
Whoa.
So, like, yeah, like these women are like very intertwined. It's very interesting. And something that Julie said, I think pretty recently, she said, I don't think there was a soul who didn't love her. This is about Audrey. And my husband adored her, too. I think I can honestly say if I hadn't come into his life, she might have. It is so sweet.
Yes, very sweet. So
it's so sweet. They just like.
So gracious.
Are two gals.
Women supporting women.
Yeah. It really is. And another thing. About like how gracious these women are. Audrey, after she found out that her voice was being dubbed totally basically by Marnie Nixon, she stormed out of the room and like left. And then the next day she came in and she apologized to the studio execs for her quote unquote wicked behavior. Like, who does that? You know, she had a rational like reaction and she still was like, I'm sorry for my wicked behavior. Like, I'm a professional. We're moving on. Like, so sweet. These women are just like good, wonderful women, which of course we already know from their just like lives they've lived and like people they've supported and causes they've supported. But like, even in like something like this that could be considered a feud or like a scandal or like a, you know, a press moment, they're still like very grateful and gracious. I just love them. I just love them.
Just to also mention that Julie, a lot of people contributed this Oscar as sort of a consolation prize, including herself. But it's also important to know that the movie Emily came out right as the Oscars were voting. And she also did The Sound of Music right around this time as well. So she had proven herself to the Voting Academy that she was a formidable force in both musical movies and non-musical movies, and had Amazing. Proven her acting chops. So I think it's unfair for us to sort of say that she only won this Oscar because she didn't play Eliza Doolittle.
I think, like, we're not saying that. I think she was probably the only person who felt that or said that.
Yeah.
You know, that it was a consolation prize. Because nobody else, from my understanding, is seeing it or has seen it that way.
No. There is a funny sketch in which Julie Andrews talks to both Eliza Doolittle and Mary Poppins together. She plays all three, yeah. And the Eliza Doolittle's like, Julie, why didn't you play me in the movie?
Yeah, it's good. It's like a, it's one of those like Hollywood gags that's just kind of like, what a bopper, you know, at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. It's fun. Yeah, great.
Do we think
we've... My favorite, Julie Andrews, though. I love Julie and everything. But I would be remiss if I didn't mention, hello, have you seen her in Princess Diaries and Princess Diaries 2, Royal Engagement? Like, I'm sorry, she's the queen of Genovia. Like, she's the queen.
She's the queen.
Can't beat her.
Gup, gup.
There's nothing better.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yep.
The queen is coming.
The end.
To Grove High School. We stan Sandra Oh.
And she says the iconic words I live my life by, a queen is never late. Everyone else is simply early. And I live my life by that. I'm like, same girl. Iconic.
Little story about a friend of the pod, Allie Wither. We were doing a acting workshop, and our acting teacher was like, you shouldn't cross your legs. You should, like, just fold them at the ankle on the side. And Allie goes, like a princess? In reference to the Princess Diaries.
Oh my god, yes, Princess Diaries teaching us all things we need to know always.
Oh, we love the Princess of Genovia. I thought Genovia was real.
Genovia, the land I call my own. You know how many times I sang that national anthem? It's a national anthem I know next after, like, the Canadian national anthem, I swear to god.
Abigail Breslin is in the second film. She's the little orphan girl that Anne Hathaway walks with.
Oh my god, she's so cute. And then they sing Break, and then Breakaway. And she's like, I'm too small, too piccola. Yeah, she's so cute. And she gives her a crown. And she's like, everyone's a princess today. Oh my god. I loved the first, okay, this might be very controversial. We're getting ready for a hot take. I loved the first movie, Princess Diaries, but Princess Diaries 2 Royal Engagement takes the cake every time. I'm sorry. For me, it does it. It just does it. So it does something that
I mean, that's a hot take. I do disagree, but.
I know. The world building in Genovia is unparalleled. The mattress surf. Raven's in it. Oh, it's good, baby. Ooh. And Julie Andrews sings. Oh,
a duet with Raven Simone.
Yeah. With Raven Simone. Yay! Who doesn't want that? I want it every day.
Just given a few little sources, so. I got most of my information from a YouTube channel called Be Kind Rewind, so go check them out because there's lots of great information on old Hollywood and the Oscars. It's a great source of information. And I also got some of my information from a New York Times article written in 1964 called Welcoming Two Fair Ladies. And it's all about Julie Andrews and Audrey Hepburn. So that's kind of almost a primary source. Sourcing is fun. All right. So I think we've made our way back into the year of our Lord 2021.
We sure have. Yes, to our present day. Correctamundo. Eric, I just have one question for you. Do you got any pop picks this week, my guy?
Oh my goodness. Do I have any pop picks? Yes. Yes, I do. Confetti by Little Mix is my jam right now.
Ooh.
The music video is pretty fun. They are drag kings in the music video. So they also look fantastic as females because they do both. And then also we've got some little guest appearances by Drag Race UK stars Tace, Ahura, and my stan, my favorite, Bimini Bamboulash.
Oh, Bimini Bamboulash, legend. I mean, Tace, come on. Tace. Ahura, love her. But Bimini, oh, babe. Bimini babes.
I definitely think that due to COVID restrictions, Tace and Ahura filmed on a totally different day than Bimini because they're never in the same shot together, even though they have a scene, and it's just, yeah. It's pretty funny.
That's really cute.
It's a drag-tastic time because the girls do dress up as men. They play their own love interests in the video.
That's, I've said it time and time again. I'm my own dream man. What can I say? I can't help it.
And I just...
Until someone better comes along, I can't
just
help
want
it.
To shout out avid listener of the pod, Matt, for sending me Little Mix. He listens. He's our St. John listener. Amazing. I know that. I see that on the little, little analytics. All right, Miss Carly, what are your pop picks this week?
So I have two. Right off the bat, easy one. Vinyl. Listening to vinyl. I forgot how many vinyl records I have. And this week, I decided I needed to listen to, because of this podcast, My Fair Lady and Camelot. And it was beautiful. It was an incredible experience. It takes a little more care than pressing play on your Spotify playlist. So I just, like, love the, like, weird ritual of, like, the record is over. Now I have to flip it. Like, it's just something so special about it. And the crackle. I don't know. You know me. I love old things.
You love some vintage.
But my other and biggest pop pick of the week, though, is the TV show Detroiters.
Uh-oh.
I have been meaning to watch this Comedy Central show for forever. It has two, like, comedy freaking legends. Two of my, like, I've been watching a lot of Veep, so I love Sam Richardson. I just love him. I love him, love him, love him, love him, love him. And this is his show. And it's so funny. It's so good. It's two seasons long. It's a really fast watch. So of course I've watched it twice, this week. And it's just so good. It's now my new show that I've decided I'm going to fall asleep to, because unlike Veep, it doesn't give me, like, weird night anxiety. It just, like, gives me nice nighttime funny.
We love it.
I love Veep, but it's so, like, the stakes are always high that I'm like, when I wake up in the middle of the night, I'm like, am I stressed or am I asleep? You know?
Where can we find this show? It's great, where though. Can we find it? You said Comedy Central.
I am watching it on Crave. It's a Comedy
Crave.
Central show. So
you are a Canadian listener, which I think something like 90% of our listeners are. You can watch it on the Crave, Canada's streaming service.
It's also, like, not, it's not like a niche TV show. It's like, yeah, it's like I said, it's a Comedy Central show, so it's pretty easy to find. Yeah, it has Sam Richardson and Tim Robinson, you know, his sketch series on Netflix. Mm-hmm. The what's it called? I think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson. Yeah, it's that guy.
Yeah.
And yeah. So
funny.
He's great. Who doesn't love him? But yeah, they're a duo and it's their show. And it has so many good, like, if you love comedy, it has, like, Amber Ruffin's in it, and she's, like, a writer on the show, too, and it's just really, it's a really great show. People show up that you're just like, what? They're so funny. I just love it. Anyways, the end. Oh, it has two shows. It was canceled too soon, like all good things.
Like all good things get canceled too soon. Like yeah. There's so much. The OC, gone too soon.
And it's also a show from, like, it ran for two seasons, and it like the last series premiered, no, it was canceled in like 2018, so it's a few years out. The first season was 2017, the second season was 2018. But I'm just getting around to watching it now, and it's wonderful, as everyone's been saying it is, so it's no surprise there. But 10 out of 10 recommend.
All right, well, I think that brings us to the end of the pod. So follow us on the Instagram at Before There Were Hashtags, and like and subscribe. Woo. Write us a review. It helps us with the algorithms.
Yes.
We love our listeners. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is a project of love that me and Miss Carly do. So peace out. We'll see you next week.
Bye. Woo woo.